Were you aware that the rabbis taught that?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown, and it's a very special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Not only are we giving away some of my mini books that deal with the agonizing question of the Holocaust and where was God in the Holocaust, but I'm going to be getting into some ancient rabbinic teaching and some modern rabbinic teaching. I bet you've never heard most of it. Perhaps you've never heard all of it. Now, as you're listening to this, I should be en route to the Philippines, where we're joining in with our fire leadership at a special retreat for our missionaries in the Philippines. So please be praying for grace as I travel, for rest as I travel, long flights, and Philippines is a long way away. Once I arrive in Manila, then there's another flight from there. So I think I go, my first flight takes me into Detroit, and then from Detroit to Japan, then Japan to Manila, and then spend the night there, then Manila to Davao, where our main team is located, where our missions retreat is going to be held. So please pray for grace and for anointing and for the Lord to move and for all of us to be refreshed over this intensive weekend. And God willing, our broadcast tomorrow is going to be coming your way straight from the Philippines. But as I record this broadcast in my home studio, it is July 8th. And on this day, Israel has been under intense assault from Hamas in Gaza. And Tel Aviv has been attacked. And Jerusalem has been attacked. Not just the town of Sderot, which if you live there often, you can only be 15 seconds away from a bomb shelter. So think of it. You're taking a shower. You're doing work. Whatever you're doing, instantly, you may have to go to a bomb shelter. That's how people have lived there. There are Holocaust survivors who live there, elderly Russian Jews, if you can imagine that. But now Israel was under siege to the point that on this day, as I'm recording this broadcast, 4 million Israelis had to take refuge over the day in bomb shelters. And yet on this very day, again, as I'm speaking these words on July 8th from Israel, a top U.S. official who's speaking at a Mideast conference is blasting Israel. Is blasting the nation and saying, how can Israel have peace if it's unwilling to delineate a border and end the occupation? This is White House Mideast Chief Philip Gordon, as reported on Times of Israel. It is a blistering speech that he delivers. Come on, as Israel's being bombed? As Israel's being bombed, this is what he has to say, whatever the words he added in. This is the keynote address. Quote, Israel confronts an undeniable reality. It cannot maintain military control over another people indefinitely. Doing so is not only wrong, but a recipe for resentment and recurring instability. It's not Israel's fault that there's not peace. It's not Israel's fault that it took land in the midst of war. It's not Israel's fault that war has been declared on it. Come on. A little sense. I understand he may believe these things, but there are days to speak it and days not to speak it. And I know that there is a very left-leaning Israeli populace as well that is always self-critical and can even be anti-Zionist. I understand that. But when you have, let's understand this. Hamas is bombing civilians intentionally and trying to kill Israelis intentionally. And when Israel attacks Hamas, They set up rocket launchers and on top of hospitals and other locations to make it very difficult for Israel to attack them without inflicting casualties on civilians. Israel will warn. Israel will say, get out. Israel will say, your neighborhood is being used. Your house is being used. Get out before we bomb. And the ethical approach is so totally different. And what does a top official with our administration do in Israel? He blasts the Israelis. We'll be right back.
fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on this very special and unique Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Because of my travel to the Philippines, I cannot take your calls, or if there's breaking news that happens during the show, I can't update you on that. But I've specially prepared the material on this show that I believe will be fascinating and eye-opening and give you some perspectives that perhaps you've never heard before. And with that, I'm going to give out the phone number. When I wrote my five-volume series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, when I wrote that series, the first volume dealt with general and historical objections. And of course, it is a Jewish objection to Jesus to say, without the long history of Christian anti-Semitism in Europe, there could not have been a Holocaust because there would not have been sufficient Jew hatred. And I absolutely agree with that and believe that's true, and address that in the book and explain why the anti-Semitism was anything but Christian. Well, that being said, I then deal with the objection in Volume 1 of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. Well, what about the Holocaust? They didn't even talk to you about Jesus until you talked about the larger issue of the Holocaust. Where was God? I felt I needed to address it. It does come up enough times when we share the gospel with a Jewish person, but I agonized over it. I thought, whatever I say, it's one of those things, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. And whatever I say is going to offend someone, and I wrestled with it, and I saved that for the last answer. Now, it's not the last answer when you read through the book, but in terms of when I wrote it, it's the last answer in Volume 1. I struggled with it, I agonized, and then I felt I got some insights. Then I felt I got something from the Lord that would be really, really helpful. In fact, we will send one of these. What we've done, Jews for Jesus, has taken my answer and made it into an attractive mini book that just deals with the problem of the Holocaust and where was God. So later in the show, we'll tell you your gift of any size. I will send you one of these as a thank you for standing with us, and you'll find it to be a powerful and moving read. But I want to give some away over the course of the broadcast, so get ready. All right, I want to give away one of these mini books where I address the problem of the Holocaust and come at it with redemptive light that ultimately points to Jesus. So call now, caller number 8. Caller number 8, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. All right, caller number 8. On Sunday, July 6th, the Elder of Zion Blogspot put out an open condemnation of the murder of Mohammed Abu Khadir. This was the 16-year-old Palestinian boy who was kidnapped and brutally murdered by Jewish terrorists, Jewish extremists, whatever you want to call them. We still don't have information on who they were. I've heard that they were secular. Some assume they were religious, but I've heard they were secular. Don't know. But here's the statement. We unequivocally condemn the horrific murder of Mohammed Abu Khadir. It was unjustifiable under any circumstances. The killing was reprehensible, and we hope that the criminals who did this sickening act are found and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. This was before the Jewish culprits were arrested, and this was known, or known for sure. Israel is a country run by the rule of law. There are reports that Jews have been arrested for this crime. If a trial finds that Jews are indeed guilty of this unconscionable killing, our condemnation is redoubled. The idea that Jews could do such an act fills us with shame and horror. The people who murdered Muhammad do not represent us in any way. It is not enough to disassociate ourselves from the dreadful act. We must also ensure that crimes like this are never repeated. just as the appalling murders of Naftali Frankel, Eyal Yifrach, and Gilad Shaar do not in any way justify the hideous murder of Muhammad Abdul Qadir, neither does Qadir's murder justify the violence, terrorism, destruction, and incitement we have seen over the past few days against Israelis and Jews. Those were the names of the three Israeli teenagers who were killed. We hope and pray that everyone, Arab and Jew, lives in peace and security in the region. And then it has numerous signers, different leaders, different organizations coming on and signing and saying, we absolutely condemn this. Jewish rabbis and others coming on. Well, check this out. If you want to hear just a perspective again that would certainly surprise you. Okay. There is a Hasidic group, at least 100,000 strong. Some put it at higher than that, twice that. But they are called Satmar Hasidim. Their famous leader was Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum. He died a number of years back, but he was a vociferous opponent to the modern state of Israel. In fact, he and other Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox rabbis before the formation of the State of Israel opposed it, and they opposed it for two primary reasons. One reason was that they said that this is the work of the Messiah. The Messiah is the one who has to regather the Jewish people to the land, and anything done prematurely will only stir up hostility towards the Jewish people. But their other reason was that the founders of the state and the ones who were campaigning for Zionism were secular. Most all of them were not religious. So how could you have a modern state of Israel that was not Torah observant, that did not observe the Sabbath, that was a secular worldly state? That would be the worst thing and the worst example for the Jewish people. Hence, the Satmar Rebbe opposed the modern state of Israel. This is a Hasidic sect, ultra-Orthodox Jewish sect that emanated from Hungary and then took refuge ultimately in New York, in Brooklyn, and they have a large community in upstate New York, a city called Kiryas Yoel, so the village of Joel, named after their head rabbi, their grand rabbi, who died some years ago. All right. After his death, there was a split with two different relatives leading the group, so they remain somewhat split. But I want you to hear what Satmar Rabbi Aaron Teitelbaum had to say when he was addressing the murder of the three Israeli teens. Are you ready for this? He said, I want to speak about an incident that happened in Eretz Yisrael where three Jewish lives were taken in an extremely brutal manner. When something tragic happens in our Holy Land, and he asked, may God comfort, may God have mercy. When something happens, tragic happens in our Holy Land, every heart bleeds, and the Holy One, blessed be He, feels the pain of His nation, and Jews everywhere feel tremendous sorrow over what happened here. And then he goes on to describe the widespread sense of mourning that's blanketed the Jewish community worldwide, and said that there's no doubt that this tremendous sorrow will bring even strangers to come and comfort those in mourning. And then he says this, but with all the pain and devastation that is part of this terrible incident, we have to examine the circumstances from a wider perspective and with wisdom, with eyes that are open to the true knowledge of Torah. And he said that this is a shocker, and he is being condemned by Jewish leaders all around the world for saying this. He said that the parents, rather than eulogizing their sons at the funeral, should have been repenting. Why? Because they were living in Jewish settlements in the midst of Muslims who were hostile, Muslims in some cases who wanted to kill them. And he says, who gave them permission? Who gave them the legal right? They were religious Jews. Who gave them the right to live there and put their own sons in danger? And he said, it's incumbent upon us to say these parents are guilty. They caused the deaths of their sons, and they must do tshuva, repentance, for their actions. Oh, boy. Think of that. Think of that. So Jewish leaders around the world, religious Jews, secular Jews, are outraged with the Satmar Rebbe and saying, how dare you? How dare you blame the parents of these children and say they put them in danger? It's their fault that they were killed. And the parents, rather than eulogizing their children, should have made confession with tears and repented. And he's also saying it puts Jews in danger worldwide because of the what consequences that now the Jews involved with killing an Arab boy, and now all the things that are going to be flaring up because of it. Outrageous words by a significant Jewish leader, but words that are being renounced by Jewish leaders all around the world. Probably didn't know that, did you?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on a special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I want to apologize if as I'm speaking to you, there is major Jewish news that is breaking. I will not be able to break into the show and share it with you, because I pre-recorded this because of travel to the Philippines. I can multitask in many ways, but we have not yet figured out how to broadcast live from 35,000 feet in the air. Maybe one day. I'm sure all the passengers would love that if that was the case. You're being a little facetious. Hey, I've got it figured out, friends, that we do a major tour to Israel, and we basically fill the whole plane with our folks, and they'll be more than happy for the show to be going on and me to be broadcasting, as long as we can hook it up. That's the problem right now. We don't have a way to broadcast from 35,000 feet live. But we have set things up to give some books away. So right now, don't call yet, because it'd be premature. It won't be the right person. My mini book, published by Jews for Jesus, excerpted from Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, my mini book on the Holocaust. I agonized over this. I prayed. I read so much. I thought about it. I took it to God, and then I felt I had insights that could be used redemptively. How to speak to a Jewish person about the agonies of the Holocaust, and ultimately to point to the cross in a redemptive way. Jews for Jesus has republished this as a beautiful mini book, and I want to give one away now to caller number 5, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, in a few minutes, I'll tell you how you can get one for a gift of any size, because I want to get this out as widely as possible. Boy, some years ago, over a decade ago, if I remember correctly, I was given a copy of this mini book that had been translated into German. Think of that. And in it, I quote extensively from a German Christian leader, Basilius Schlink, whose words will just pierce you to the heart. All right, on today's broadcast, I'm sharing some things ancient and modern from the rabbis that you would be surprised to hear. What about the issue of redefining marriage? What about the issue of same-sex so-called marriage? Is that something that the ancient rabbis addressed? Actually, yes, in several different texts, fascinatingly enough. And this was never something that Jewish society accepted for a split second, but rather renounced. Now, I was aware of these texts. A colleague sent me an article. It was the Feminine Sexual Ethics Project, I believe Brandeis University, And Gail Labovitz was the senior research analyst of this project and put out an article that brought together all of the major rabbinic texts, ancient rabbinic texts, so within the last 1,800 years or so, or 1,800 years back, 1,700 years back, that deal with this question. So let me share these with you. You'll be surprised to hear them. One is the rabbinic commentary, legal commentary on Leviticus. It's called Sifra. And it is from the section which is called Acharei Mot, which is after the death, speaking of the death of Nadav and Avihu. For those who know rabbinic literature, it's Parasha 9:8. And it's commenting on the words, according to the doings of the land of Egypt and the doings of the land of Canaan, you shall not do. Where is that found? Leviticus 18:3. The commentary says, can it be that it means don't build buildings and don't plant plantings? Thus, the verse teaches further, and you shall not walk in their statutes. I say that the prohibition of the verse applies only to their statutes, the statutes which are theirs and their fathers' fathers. And what did they do? So what's it saying the ancient Canaanites and ancient Egyptians did? A man got married to a man and a woman to a woman. A man married a woman and her daughter, and a woman was married to two men. Therefore, it is said, and you shall not walk in their statutes. So rabbinic literature, roughly 1,800 years ago, was claiming that the ancient Egyptians and the ancient Canaanites did that. And when God said, don't do what they do, it didn't mean don't live normal lives, you know, build buildings and plant plantings, but don't follow their sinful statutes. And then Genesis Rabbah, this is a homiletical commentary on Genesis, chapter 26, section 5. So 26:5 in Genesis Rabbah. And it's commenting on Genesis 6:2. And the sons of God saw the daughters of man, that they were fair, and took for themselves wives, whomever they choose. So Genesis 6:2, that they were fair. Rabbi Yudan said, it is written fair, tovot. What it means, suggests, is one who was being adorned for her husband, meaning for her wedding. And it says the leader, literally the great one, would enter and have sex with her first. This is what is written, fair, these are the virgins, and took for themselves wives, these are the married women, whomever they choose. This is a male or an animal. Rabbi Huna, in the name of Rabbi Yosef, said, the generation of the flood, so Noah's day, was not wiped out until they were, and the Hebrew is gemumasaot, which is speaking of the union of a man to a male or to an animal. So it's saying that in the days of Noah, things got so bad that a man would marry a man or unite with a man or with an animal. This is ancient rabbinic literature. Then Leviticus Rabbah, homiletical commentary on the book of Leviticus 23:9. It's commenting on Leviticus 18, don't do what they did in the land of Egypt, etc. And it goes on with comments there, and it says, the generation of the flood were kings and were only wiped off the earth because they were soaked in sexual sin. Rabbi Huna, in the name of Rabbi Yosef, said the same tradition. So here are a couple of ancient rabbinic passages that say that the Egyptians, Canaanites, the generation of the flood, engaged in all types of sexual sin, including a man marrying a man, a woman marrying a woman, incestuous relationships, and bestiality. That's what's written in ancient rabbinic literature. I bet you didn't know that. All right, are you ready? The number to call, 1-800-278-9978, only by phone. We don't have this on our website. Your gift of any size, those who can help with a generous gift, to help with those who have little, just any size, whatever's on your heart, to stand with us. I want to send you a copy of my mini book on the problem of the Holocaust. Where was God? What about Jesus? How does this all fit? You will be moved and stirred and informed by this. Your gift of any size, 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. And please remember to pray with me and for me for a mighty, wonderful trip in the Philippines. And please keep the Middle East and the people of Israel in your prayers.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown here. I'm not able to take calls because of my travel schedule to the Philippines, so please pray for grace. It's many hours of travel, only there for a few days, and then turn around and come straight back. And while there in the midst of the ministry, we are going to be producing, God willing, some great shows from the Philippines for you with our missionaries there. You'll be stirred. You'll be encouraged. I think we'll have some fun. As well, as always, we want the broadcast to be informative. So be looking forward to our show tomorrow from the Philippines, and hopefully one more on Monday from the Philippines. But it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and I just want to step back and say this. I can't update you on breaking news to the second of what's happening in Israel right now because we've had to prepare this show in advance. But, when you see, for example, on Tuesday night or Tuesday day, as bombs are falling in or near Jerusalem and bombs being launched, rockets being launched at Tel Aviv, and 4 million Israelis having to take refuge in bomb shelters. I mean, a very traumatic time, and Israel aggressively seeking to snuff out the aggression of Hamas. Remember that Israel unconditionally gave Gaza back to the Palestinians and said, okay, it's yours in its entirety, and we're not giving you all types of conditions. And what happens? Hamas gets elected as the governing power, and Hamas has been bombing Israel ever since. Well, obviously, the hostilities are very intense. So it's very disturbing when you see that Arab Israelis living with freedom in the land, as bombs are being dropped or rockets being shot at Jerusalem, that hundreds of them gather on the Temple Mount to celebrate and to chant, grateful that Israel is being bombed. It's very distressing to see that. At the same time, there are other gatherings. Hundreds of Jews and Arabs gathering together saying, let us live in peace together. And barring, though, divine intervention and Jesus, Yeshua, being in the middle of it, I don't know how that can happen. One last fascinating text I want to give you. The end of the last half hour, I gave you some fascinating texts from ancient rabbinic writings that made reference to the Egyptians or Canaanites or generation of Noah practicing so-called same-sex marriage. And here's what it says in the Talmud and in Hulin 92 A and B. Here's a quote from Zechariah 11. I said to them, if it's good in your eyes, give me my wage, and if not, withhold it. They weighed out for me my wage, 30 pieces of silver. Rabbi Yehuda says, these, namely the pieces of silver, symbolize the 30 righteous people of the nations of the world, such that the nations of the world are sustained by them. Ula said, these are the 30 commandments which the children of Noah, speaking a rabbinic term for non-Jews, accepted upon themselves, but only keep 3 of them. And one is that they do not write a marriage contract for males. So it's saying that the righteous Gentiles do not write a marriage contract for males, saying that there was such a thing done by pagans and heathen where men would, quote, marry men. And according to another ancient text, that was one of the things that brought on the wrath of God and the judgment of God in the days of Noah. Talk about nothing new under the sun. There you have another striking example. We come back, we are going to talk about the Holocaust and Jewish response to the Holocaust, and we'll be giving away a free copy of my mini book that deals with the problem of the Holocaust and God's answer.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Michael Brown here. In a moment, I'm going to give away another copy of my mini book on the agonizing problem, the agonizing question of the Holocaust, and a redemptive response, one that even points to the Redeemer, Jesus, Yeshua. Jews for Jesus has reprinted this. It is excerpted from Volume 1 of my series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus, my lengthy answer on the Holocaust. I'll tell you in a little while how you can get this for gift of any size. We don't have it on our website, so I'll give you a number to call in a moment. But I want to give away another copy of this mini book, which you'll find to be a tremendously important read, and it's beautifully produced by Jews for Jesus. We'll make this quick. Caller number 5, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, I do apologize if, as I'm speaking to you, there is breaking news taking place in Israel or major Jewish-related news. I will not be able to update you because of my travel schedule to the Philippines, but will constantly be posting through social media and through articles. Also, if you haven't read my latest article where a religious Jew says I'm as dangerous to the Jewish people as Hamas, why? Because I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus who shares the good news with other Jews, and God's given us grace to be effective in doing it. Read my latest article. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article to read that. I want to share, as I have through this broadcast, some fascinating, some unexpected teachings, ancient and modern, from rabbinic texts or modern rabbinic leaders. I want to contrast the views of two of the most influential ultra-Orthodox leaders of the last generation, Rabbi Eliezer Shach, who was born somewhere in the late 1800s and died in 2001, a leader in Israel but of Eastern European descent. So he lived to be at least 102 years old. I've heard some say he was 107. And then the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the much loved Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who also came from Eastern Europe and died in 1994, lived for 40 plus years in Brooklyn, and died in 1994 at the age of 1992. They had very different approaches to the suffering of the Jewish people, their people in the Holocaust. Remember, they all were immediately affected by it. They all were immediately affected and lost people that would have been close to them on one level or another because of the horrors of that season. Rabbi Joseph Telushkin, one of the leading Jewish thinkers and authors today, has written a large volume on the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We've talked about him on the air at different times, and some of his followers have called to put forth the claim that he is the Messiah, even though he died 20 years ago. But in Rabbi Telushkin's book on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he does talk about the contrasting views that Menachem Schneerson had as compared to Eliezer Shach. So Rabbi Telushkin says among Rabbi Shach's well-known positions was his certainty. These are not my words, okay? Was Rabbi Shach's certainty that the Holocaust was a divine punishment for Jewish sinfulness, or, as he phrased it, quote, again, these are the words of an ultra-Orthodox rabbi who would have been directly affected by the horrors of the Holocaust. Quote, God kept count of each and every sin in a running count over hundreds of years until the count amounted to 6 million Jews, and that is how the Holocaust occurred. So must a Jew believe. And if a Jew does not believe this, he is a heretic. And if we do not accept this as punishment, then it is as if we don't believe in the Holy One, blessed be He. Rabbi Schacht continued, quote, again, these are not my words. These are Rabbi Schacht's words. After exterminating the 6 million, he began counting again. We don't know where the count is up to now, maybe a year or two, but when it is full, God will punish again. This is how it is, and no one can deny this. It is forbidden to say this is not so. In 1990, in the same attitude, Rabbi Telushkin points out that Rabbi Schacht, who's now in his early 90s, delivered his most famous speech. It was during a 1990 political campaign in Israel. He expressed his opposition to religious parties entering into a coalition with the Labor Party. Again, I'm reading from Rabbi Joseph Telushkin's book on the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe Menachem Mendel Schneerson. In the speech, Schacht singled out the secular Israeli kibbutzim for a particular condemnation, speaking of kibbutz members as those who, quote, rear rabbits and pigs, who do not know what Yom Kippur is, what the Day of Atonement is, and who have no concept of Judaism. And he said, can these people be called Jews? There was an outrageous response against them. And Israel's president, Chaim Herzog, who was the son of the late Israeli chief rabbi, Isaac Halevi Herzog, and himself was a former general, asked in a radio broadcast, if this nation knows how much it owes to the kibbutzniks, so those who've lived in the kibbutzim and developed them, with their work-calloused hands and weather-beaten faces, he's wondering, does the nation really know how much it owes them? He said, when I stand at the graves of our war dead, who fought and sacrificed without any thought for political or religious differences, I ask myself whether we should seek their posthumous forgiveness. Wow, quite a contrast there. Now, there were other ultra-Orthodox rabbis who also felt that the Holocaust was a direct punishment for Jewish sin, that the fact that Jews were departing from traditional Judaism and becoming Reform or becoming liberal and departing from the traditions, that this is what brought on the Holocaust, that Jews were not observing the Sabbath in Germany and Jews in other parts of Europe were capitulating to culture, because of which God brought the judgment of the Holocaust on. And Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson's predecessor, who was the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, he also felt that the Holocaust was a divine judgment for sin. But Rabbi Schneerson, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, did not hold to that view. And his view was that ultimately we don't know. He did see God as a divine physician working through it in a certain level. But in point of fact, he specifically said, we don't know why these things happen. And he did not put his emphasis on the Holocaust. He felt that telling Jews about the past and look at the horrible suffering we went through, and therefore we should continue to live as Jews, was not a sufficient motivation. And in fact, Rabbi Telushkin, in his book about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, tells the story of a woman who had completely assimilated and was raising her kids as non-Jews. After the horrors of the Holocaust, a Jewish woman, she said, why should I subject my kids to something like that again, to potentially being singled out again and hated and killed as Jews? Rather, Rabbi Schneerson said, we don't know why these things have happened, and emphasized the importance of Jewish calling and the joy of keeping commandments, and felt that that was a higher and better motivation. So here are significant ultra-Orthodox rabbis with very, very different approaches to the great agonizing Jewish question of the 20th century. Why the Holocaust? Where was God in the Holocaust? For my redemptive answer to this, and of course, I don't pretend to have all the answers, but for a redemptive response, my mini book on the Holocaust has just been reprinted in a beautiful volume by Jews for Jesus. You can get it for your gift of any size. So call now 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. This whole broadcast, we've been sharing some interesting information, some ancient texts, some modern teachings from the rabbis, from religious Jews. I hope you're finding it informative and eye-opening. And above all, let's remember to be joined together in prayer for the Jewish people, for the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we are continuing with this special Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Boy, what a week. Rocket attacks on Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, other parts of Israel. Millions of Israelis having to take refuge in bomb shelters. Just an intense, intense, difficult time for the nation of Israel. And obviously, in the midst of all of this, the Palestinians will suffer greatly as well. And I lay the blame for that at the feet of their leadership, and mixed with that, some of the attitudes of Islam. Pray for God's mercy. Pray for God's grace in the midst of the crisis. This broadcast, I've been sharing some fascinating information, some ancient rabbinic texts, some modern rabbinic teaching, some controversial statements, and I've given away a few copies of my mini book on the Holocaust that straight on addresses the agonizing question, why did God allow 6 million Jews to die in the Holocaust? My mini book is excerpted from Volume 1 of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, where I felt the Lord gave me a redemptive approach to this agonizing question. Jews for Jesus reprinted this as a separate mini book. I want to give away one more copy. Caller number 8. One more copy. Here's the number to call. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884, caller number 8. And let me just close out the show by sharing a few rabbinic responses to the problem of the Holocaust. The Jewish historian Stephen Katz, back in 1975, provided a summary of major Jewish reflections on the Holocaust as of 1975. And here are the principal answers or responses that he came up with. 9 different principal responses. 1, the Holocaust is like all other tragedies and merely raises again the question of theodicy, so divine justice, and the problem of evil. But it does not significantly alter the problem or contribute anything new to it. So it's massive, but it's part of the larger issue of the problem of evil. 2, the classical Jewish theological doctrine of mipnei chataenu, which is because of our sins we were punished, which was evolved in the face of earlier national calamities. This can also be applied to the Holocaust. According to this account, Israel was sinful and Auschwitz is her just retribution. We saw in the last segment that there's some ultra-Orthodox rabbis. For example, we quoted Rabbi Eleazar Shach, who died well past 100 years old, a little over a decade ago, and he said that God had been counting Jewish sins until the moment was reached when the guilt was sufficient to wipe out 6 million Jews, and that's why the Holocaust happened, and he's counting again now. Choice 3. The Holocaust is the ultimate and vicarious atonement. Israel is the suffering servant of Isaiah, chapter 53. She suffers and atones for the sins of others. Some die so that others might be cleansed and live. Now, I take that up in my mini book. By the way, in a moment, I'll tell you how you can, for your gift of any size, how you can get a copy of this mini book on the Holocaust and why did God allow 6 million Jews to suffer. And by the way, I list these answers in the book. Number four, the Holocaust is a modern Akedah, the sacrifice of Isaac. It's a test of our faith. Number five, the Holocaust is an instance of the temporary eclipse of God. There are times when God is inexplicably absent from history or unaccountably chooses to turn his face away. Six, the Holocaust is proof that, quote, God is dead. If there were God, he would surely have prevented Auschwitz. If he did not, then he does not exist. Number seven, the Holocaust is the maximization of human evil, the price mankind has to pay for human freedom. The Nazis were men, not gods. Auschwitz reflects ignominiously on man. It does not touch God's existence or perfection. Number eight, the Holocaust is a revelation. It issues a call for Jewish affirmation. From Auschwitz comes the command, Jews survive. Number nine, the Holocaust is an inscrutable mystery. Like all of God's ways, it transcends human understanding and demands faith and silence. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, whom I quoted in or referred to in the last segment, explained the Holocaust along the lines of, he said this, with all the horrifying pain of this tragedy, it is clear that no evil comes from heaven and that within the very evil and suffering of the afflictions, a sublime spiritual good is embodied. The Holy One, blessed be He, as that Professor Surgeon, did everything he did for good. So somehow, out of this, which the Rebbe said can't be explained, there's a healing process, a divine surgery and treatment performed on the body of the nation in preparation for its salvation. And Rabbi Z.Y. Cook said this, the Holocaust was, quote, a deep and hidden internal divine treatment of the cleansing of impurity. What I do in my mini book is agonizing through the questions and going through these different options. I begin to quote a Christian leader, German Christian leader, an opponent of the Nazis. He had actually done outreach to Muslims before that. Basilia Schlink, she founded the Evangelical Sisterhood of Mary, went to be with the Lord some years back in her 90s, an exceptionally godly woman who raised up an exceptionally godly movement of godly women, praying women with a great, great love for Israel and heart for Israel. And Basilia Schlink wrote to her German people with agony and pain and rebuke. And I quote her words, and it was her words that got me thinking. As she said, the Jewish people look a lot more like Jesus than the church right now in terms of the suffering and pain. I began to think that's the image, a Jesus to whom the Jewish people can relate, the Jesus of history who suffered and died, a Messiah to whom we can relate, who understands rejection, who understands unmerited hatred, except he was the perfectly sinless one, and his blood brings redemption. It's all in the mini book. It's yours for your gift of any size. Stand with us, sow into us in Jewish ministry. Perhaps the Lord will prompt you to give in an exceptionally generous way, but I want to send this out to everyone for your gift of any size, the mini book on the problem of the Holocaust. Call now 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. This is not available through our website, so you need to call 1-800-278-9978 to order. Please keep me in prayer as I am ministering in the Philippines and hope to be coming your way from the Philippines tomorrow. And let's keep Israel in prayer right now. My bottom line, the people of Israel, the nation of Israel, the history of Israel, all these things present massive mysteries. As we look back through history, many things we cannot figure out, but they ultimately point us to the God of Israel.